Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Happy Friday, everybody. We made it to the end of the week. Hope it's the end of your work week. Claude Nolan brings you the show every Friday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Tony, rarely do we comment on anything outside of the Jacksonville Jaguars and the National Football League on the show.
Right.
But, boy, if we did, if I were so inclined to do it today, boy, would I be rubbing in all those fence riders who said, oh, I think Kentucky's going to win, but, oh, West Virginia, Bob Huggins is 8-2. That's got to mean something. No, it doesn't have to mean anything. Stop it. Are we going to hear this next year? If they match up in a tournament, well, Huggins is 8-3 against Calipari, right? We're going to hear this for the next however many years until Calipari's legions wash over the. I enjoyed the beatdown last night.
It wasn't
simply
this
for the stupidity
team
of people.
Right. It wasn't this Kentucky team that Bob Huggins was 8-2 against. And you saw the results last night. They just, West Virginia came out flat. I think in the second half they came out and it took them 10 minutes to score a basket. I mean, it was ridiculous how bad West Virginia was.
How bad it was. Kentucky could have gone scoreless in the second half and won by, I think, 4 or 5 points.
Yep.
When it was all said and done. And one of the players, don't think, and I try to poo-poo the motivation angle, the bulletin board material, but I think for college players are more prone to emotion. I think, to me, it looked like Kentucky clearly kicked it into fifth gear very early last night and was not going to settle. They were going to drive to the rim. They were going to dominate that game. It was fun to see. And then did you hear about the kid, you know, the freshman on West Virginia? I can't even remember his name, that, you know, said they're going to be 36-1 after
Daxter
the game.
Daxter Miles.
Right.
You hear what he did after the game? What is it?
Daxter
what is it,
Miles,
Tyler?
The freshman.
Daxter Miles.
Yep.
There you go. Daxter Miles. Name which should live in infamy now. You know what he did after the game? He hid in the bathroom.
Oh, come on.
He
man.
Went to the bathroom. He was in the bathroom when it was open locker room and the media session. He wasn't there. And then a reporter went into the bathroom looking for him, and he went into the handicap stall, and he just stood in the handicap stall until somebody on the West Virginia, I guess, I don't know, staff went in there and said, look, you don't have to go out there, but they're not going to let it go. It's going to be worse if you don't go out there. And he went out there and went full Marshawn Lynch and just basically said Kentucky played great over and over and over again. Hey, you know what? You're a tough guy. You're a man now. You're 18. I'm going to throw that quote out there. Just take your medicine.
Own
it's just
it.
Words. Own it.
Own
you big
it.
Baby.
Come
big
on,
baby.
Man. You're going to say something like that. You just own it.
By the way,
Tyler?
Daxter Miles, stat line, 19 minutes, 0 points, 0 assists.
Yeah, 0 points.
0 steals. One rebound.
If they had scored 40 more, they would have won. I mean, if they had scored 40 more and everything else went the same, they would have won the game last night. So I'm done with that, but I enjoyed the beating that they served up last night for all these fence-riding babies. Nothing brings out the fence-riding like the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I know.
Honestly, I'm going to pick this team. They're going to get to the championship. Franchi was classic for this, and I'll tell him it to his face because I have, a few years ago, what was it, Kansas and Memphis, right, playing?
I think so, yeah.
I forget which way it went. Like, he picked Kansas. And then at the last minute, you decide, well, I think Memphis is going to win the game. I'm like, you can't do that. You can't. You pick the team to win it all. They've made it to the championship game, and now you're going to switch your pick?
Right.
You just want both sides of the fence. You want to be able to say, look, I told you. Big babies. All don't be afraid to be wrong. It's okay to be wrong.
Yeah, especially about something like this where people are wrong every year. That's why these teams are playing in the Sweet 16 anyway. Most of it's like just except the fact that, yeah, you're going to make a guess sometimes on these teams and you're going to be wrong. I said it from the beginning of this tournament that I thought it would be bad for the tournament if Kentucky was knocked out before the Final Four anyway. I think a team
that is
undefeated to this point in the year. I didn't want to see Georgia beat them when they had them on the ropes a little bit in the regular season. I was like, don't end this now. Not like this. Not in Atlanta. You know, I don't want to see this end there. So look, I'm glad that Kentucky's moving on to the Elite Eight. I hope they get into the Final Four, and we'll see what test is presented to them then.
Don't forget, though, Bob Huggins is 8-3 against Calipari. Tony, it must mean the next time they match up that Huggins' team has the edge. It must mean that. All right, I'm done with that. I do miss it. Somebody asked me the other day, do I miss just not talking about all these other things? And on occasion, yes, I do. I may have gone on an epic rant today, had that not been the case. And this is just a very self-contained little moment right here, Tony. We'll talk a little draft today with Dane Brugler from CBS Sports. We debated a little bit for the Friday Top 5, which we will unveil in a moment. We already unveiled it via social media, but debated doing Top 5 favorite draft analysts. But
yeah,
it's kind of probably a little bit too much of a niche kind of thing, and how deep are you going to go with that anyway, right? I mean,
right.
You're going to, you know, for most, some people hate Kiper or McShay. A lot of people love Mayock, Daniel Jeremiah. But the pool to draw from is not all that wide. So we did go out. We branched out a little outside of just simply football today. But it is sports related. Today, the Friday Top 5, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships. In lieu of a question of the day, it's the Friday Top 5. We're asking you five questions. Who are your five current non-Jaguar athletes that you would pay to see play?
Mm-hmm.
You may have already seen them play. You just love watching them perform so much. They can be on another team that you root for in another sport. They can be anything you like. But
sure,
what would compel you to go see and put your own hard-earned money out there? And it's interesting, as I'm doing my list, very difficult for me to come up with guys in the NFL. And I wonder if that's because we've seen a lot of them, certainly a bunch of them, live and in person, and I don't know why that is, but you know, they're great performers in the National Football League, and some dazzling ones. Maybe Adrian Peterson would have been on that list before. I'm not really comfortable with him being on that list for me now. He could
sure
be on your list if you want him to, whatever the case may be.
No, I can tell you my five are all guys that I've not seen.
I would guess you have more soccer players on your list than I do.
If you have zero,
any,
then yes.
If you have any, then that is a correct statement. So, and somewhat, now, do what you like with this.
I'm a little all over the place.
It's a Friday Top 5. It's not the end of the world here, even though I make things out to be a federal
case. The guy that you're about to call out for this, he's actually going to the UFC. He is joining a fighting championship ring.
All right.
So he may have gotten his bones as a wrestler, but he is switching
Stevie
sports.
Irish Jaguar has CM Punk, but he has, in parentheses, wrestler. Like, we wouldn't know who that is. We have heard of him. What's Teddy Bridgewater? Vikings QB. Thanks, Stevie. Appreciate that, brother. All right, I guess
he thought we may need help with number four on his list. I think.
Well, there's probably some on there that I might need a little. I think I would have needed help with number four on his list, but CM Punk. Look, if you want to put pro wrestlers who are athletic,
UFC,
they're good athletes. So I guess in that standpoint, they don't participate in an athletic competition. It's a scripted. It's like Cirque du Soleil. That's what I compare it to. It's very fun to watch if you
sports
like to see, you know, the human body perform crazy feats that not many people are capable of.
Right.
Have at it, I suppose. I'm not going to make not going to make my top 500 on any of those guys.
CM Punk getting on your top 500?
CM Punk or any other wrestler, past, present, living, or dead.
If you had seen his bit that he was doing a handful of years ago, you may have really liked CM Punk, because he would get on stage and he would pretend he was better than everybody else. He's like, I'm a better man than you. And he'd go through this whole thing. It was so fantastic, him talking down to the audience as a heel. But
yeah, but it's all fake, though.
I know, but it was a good fake. It was a fun fake.
I get, right, whatever.
You don't do the wrestling thing. It's fine.
It's okay. I did when I was 12. Okay, I did, and then I grew up. It's, oh, this is all fake. Hey, I'm not going to watch this. But that's all right. I realize most people probably understand that it's fake, but damn, do they buy into those storylines.
It's
but
so
hey,
real.
I watched The Walking Dead, and it's not like Georgia is infested with zombies.
Right.
Or Alexandria or anywhere
else. That's
how
you prefer your fake entertainment.
That's right. My fake entertainment, I want it obviously fake.
Right.
And there's no hint whatsoever. They never try to pretend.
They're not showing that to some part of the country where they're like, is this happening?
No, they're not. Here's another reason why you might not have five favorite draft analysts. Such a frustrating little season, it's understandable. And as much as I enjoy it, I get the stupidity of it too. Todd McShay updated his top 32 big board.
Yeah.
Got to call it a big board. And Todd Gurley, who last we saw was tearing an ACL and has not been able to work out for anybody since, just went up four spots in his rankings. How did he go up? How did he go up four spots? How's Todd Gurley any different today than he was the last time he put out his rankings, probably a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago.
I do not know. And the other really big question mark I had reading through this list, Shane Ray, he has at 15, which is fine. But Shane Ray at 15, all right. It's that his previous rank on Shane Ray was not ranked in his top 32, okay? His analysis of Shane Ray, I've cooled on Ray a little bit as I've studied more of his tape. So he goes from not ranked to 15th.
Right, and that's cooling on a guy? It really doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Like, did you write this in like version 10 and you just copy and pasted it to this
one? I wonder if you're right, and I wonder if it was an oversight that he didn't rank Shane Ray in his last one.
Right.
And he just forgot, and maybe when he submitted it, he typed in, you know, the 32 of the top 33 names. He's got a working list. I don't know. But you're right. It's so ridiculous. I've cooled on him. So I've boosted him at least 17 spots in my rankings, or 18 spots, as the case may be. Highest he could have been before was 33rd on a 32-man ranking list. Take a look today as well at interesting conversation or story on CBSSports.com ranking 30 players who have yet to win a championship in the National Football League who are over 30 years old and ranking them by their Hall of Fame chances. Because obviously, you win a ring, it's a big piece of your resume if you're seen to be an integral part of winning that. But certainly Pro Bowls, All-Pro selections, league-leading statistics in certain categories play a major factor as well. But interesting ranking of 30 guys. We'll run through that coming up here as well and give you some thoughts on some of those players. In addition to Dane Brugler from NFL Draft Scout and CBSSports.com, Ryan O'Halloran wraps up the week in Jaguar coverage with us coming up at about 10:40 this morning, about 30 minutes from now, as he was out at the owners' meetings, obviously, earlier in the week. Give you his collective final thoughts on that and where the Jags are headed from here on out. And right now, where things stand, who he thinks would top the Jaguars' wish list in terms of the NFL draft. Now, this 5 weeks from today, we'll already tell you what the top five is going to be 5 weeks from today. Presuming the Jags don't trade up and don't have a second-round pick, if they're still sitting there with the fourth pick of the second round, when the board gets restacked, it'll be the top five guys you hope the Jags are able to land at number 36. But that's for a future date. Right now, we've got business to attend to. So you can tweet us, as always, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler. Today's Friday Top 5 brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Your top 5 non-Jaguar current athletes that you would pay to see play. This is not an all-time list. They'll go throwing Jim Brown on the list.
Right.
Okay, unless you think he's making a comeback.
Active athletes.
Maybe he's going to be a heel in the WWE. What are they, E or F now?
E.
E. They've been that for probably 20 years?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I figured. That's right on top of things. The WWI.
The Panda Organization got mad.
It's coming right back. Is that what the World Wildlife Fund? Is that what that was?
Fund, yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah.
That was a good pull right out of the depths, the catacombs of my little brain here today. So all that coming up and more. We'll take your calls at 641-1010. Oh, yeah. Remember we were alluding to maybe a little Jaguars today golf get-together.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure how I'm going to determine this. Maybe I'll do it over the weekend. I really don't know. I guess I'll throw it out there now in case you want to make your pitch. But went to the J Fund Wine Tasting Gala last week, and in the silent auction, I got a foursome at San Jose Country Club. Got a tee time for next Wednesday afternoon at 1:30. Okay? So if you want to play, maybe pitch your case to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've got three spots filled. Tony can't play. He's got the bum shoulder.
Yes, I do.
He's on the DL. Are you injured reserve designated to return, or what are you? Are you season ending?
I don't know. I have to have a doctor scope it out and let me know exactly what that's...
You're just not a weekly inactive right now.
Yeah, for now.
Determination needs to be made on your status.
I am, like, it's killing me. It's killing me every day that I go home and it's 75 or 80 degrees outside and that sun is shining. And those are the afternoons where I would usually go walk 9, if nothing else, and I can't.
Have you seen the weather for the next 3 days? After today, Saturday,
yeah,
Sunday,
cool.
Monday, it's going to be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Not a drop of rain.
Yep.
I am taking Monday off to go play in the Guggen. I've never played in the Guggen before, Tony. You think I get an invite every once in a while? Yeah, I think that would be how that would work. But actually, I'm going to go play in the Guggen Golf Tournament
right on
Monday. So Osier's going to be in with you. So that's what I'm saying. I don't want to leave this till Tuesday to try to determine, you know, 24 hours ahead of time who's going to be playing next Wednesday. So if you want to make your case on why you would like to come out and play and join me at San Jose Country Club, on me, next Wednesday. You can email me, MikeD@1010XL.com, or you can tweet me, whatever the case may be, Facebook. You know how to get a hold of me by this point in time. All right, we'll come back, and we'll look a little deeper into Todd McShay's fascinating top 32 big board, plus the 30 players over 30 who haven't won a ring, and ranking them by their Hall of Fame chances. We'll get into that as well. Ryan O'Halloran coming up in about 30 minutes right here. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. This is Jaguars Today. We're live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Friday's brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac here on Jaguars Today. Since 1905, Claude Nolan Cadillac serving as the preferred Cadillac dealer in all of Northeast Florida because, well, a number of reasons. Largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville. Absolutely no dealer fees. And the only Cadillac dealer here in this area to sell and service the ELR. We've got an on-site body shop, a paint repair, any Cadillac model. And they're guaranteed to offer you the highest level in customer care and service. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac. One step away, you can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Coming up, Ryan O'Halloran in about 20 minutes. A little bit later, Dane Brugler, NFL Draft Scout, CBSSports.com. Get the latest on his speculations on the shifting sands as the NFL prepares to launch the draft now in less than 5 weeks up in Chicago.
Isn't that unbelievable? 34 days?
I guess it is. It's still a long
considering
time.
Last year we were 50 days away still.
That's true. It's still a long time, though. I mean, it's still over a month away, and we do focus on it. It seems like it's gotten here quicker to me just because I took the week off, and I put the whole draft out of my head, and free agency played a role
was
in
a really big deal this year.
Right, it was huge here, so you weren't thinking about the draft. You're like, wow, we've got players coming in right now. I heard Dan and Jeff talking about it this morning about how, I want to say they said 5 of the 10 highest paid Jags now were just signed in free agency. And I know Jeff's point was they might run into some trouble. I think that's part of the reason they hired John Idzik here, is to look forward and say, all right, let's speculate internally. And start looking at if some of the young crop of players that we've drafted turn out to be long-term keepers. That's why you sit there and you say, well, they still have all this cap space. Right, but they've got to plan on multiple levels here, right? They still have to sign the draft class. You have to keep a little reserve fund in case injuries hit. And you have to sign somebody off the street. And, you know, you've got to look ahead to next year. Is who are the big-name guys coming up in next year's class? You want to roll over some cash maybe for that, but you also want to hold some back for your guys who are up and coming. By the way, what is that smell? Do you smell this?
Yeah, I don't know what that
is. What is that?
I don't know. It just started.
It did just start, right?
Yeah.
I'm just here to tell you it's not me, okay? I don't know what it is.
No, it smells like a rotten salon. That's what it smells like.
Like a rotten salon?
Yeah. Like a
hair salon?
Yeah. It smells bad.
Like that's like a hair product gone bad?
Is yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. I was like, when have you ever been in a rotten salon?
Well, it's a salon that's gone bad.
All right.
That's what it smells like
in here. It does smell. Is that Shadrick? I hope that's not Shadrick. He's like in the next guy right down the hall. Probably not JP.
But, you know, we had the conversation when we were getting ready for free agency a few weeks ago. Exactly what you were just talking about, Mike, is the reason that we said they can make a run at a guy like Ndamukong Suh. Because they can't put it so heavy in the first couple of years with a lot of these guys right now that in 3 years when they start having to make decisions on a lot of these young guys on their roster, the key pieces that they hope they're going to be building this team around, in 3 years they're hoping to have that money still. So they could go spend money here this offseason, next offseason, and front load some of these contracts and keep themselves flexible for when all these guys start needing to be renegotiated. The Allen Robinsons and Marquise Lees and Blake Bortles and all these other guys. Telvin Smith, when his deal comes up, assuming he plays the next couple of years like he did this past season, you're going to renegotiate with him probably as soon as you can because he's going to be really criminally underpaid if he's performing at the same kind of level in two
Correct.
Years that he was this year. So that's a guy that you're going to look at. Maybe Blake Bortles, because you selected him number 3 overall, you wait until after that fourth year to actually get a contract done with him and let him play it out, even if he does improve going into the 2015 season. But there's going to be a lot of that core group on this team that in 2 and 3 years is when you got to start worrying about money, which is exactly why you bring in a guy like Idzik.
I think Jeff referenced Julius Thomas, I'm looking up his contract details right now, seeing what he is getting. $6 million signing bonus, so that's money he is being paid this year, although salary cap purposes, it doesn't hit all this year. So he's going to make, what, roughly $9 million, I believe, this season, plus, if I'm not mistaken, signed a five-year, $46 million contract. This is according to Roto-World. Deal contained $24 million guaranteed, including a $6 million signing bonus, and each of Thomas's first two base salaries. Doesn't say what the base salary is in 2015, but looking at it going forward, it seems like a pretty level contract. There are not too many big jumps, but that's part of what they can do. You know, like he's making, for instance, Julius Thomas, $9 million next year. He's going to make $6 million in 2017. He's going to make $7 million in 2018. So it's high, then it dips a little bit, and I would suspect that's in anticipation of what we're talking about, looking at which guys are coming up and which guys are likely to require more funds coming their way. Let's take a look, Tony, before I completely forget to get to it, which would be a typical day for me. And somebody named Bruce Gannon on CBSSports.com, I'm not familiar with him, but nonetheless, wrote an interesting article ranking 30 ringless 30-something stars by their Hall of Fame chances in the NFL. In other words, guys who have not won a Super Bowl, they're over the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me if you agree with the characterizations of these guys. They have odds to go to the Hall of Fame, odds to win a championship. I'm not really concerned about the odds to win a championship because you never know from year to year, and you never know which, you know, guy gets traded. He's on a completely different team.
Right.
So Adrian Peterson, number one on the list, shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. You agree?
Yes.
I do, too. Despite, if you never played another down, I think he's a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. Because he's got a Paul Bunyan-esque quality to his play, right? He's larger than life. He's a three-time first-team All-Pro, second-highest single-season rushing yards in NFL history, and one of only 29 backs who are over 10,000 yards. And the highlight film goes on and on and on.
Yep.
Plus, was the single-game record holder, is the single-game record holder? 296?
I think it is.
296, I want to say, right?
Yeah.
So, anyway, pretty significant. I'm with you. Larry Fitzgerald, he said shoo-in for the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
I think so, too. You know, without getting into all the stats, 12th all-time with 89 touchdowns, easily should retire as part of the exclusive 1,000-catch club, and he's been to 8 Pro Bowls. Pretty good. Andre Johnson, very strong. Doesn't list him as a shoo-in. You think he's a shoo-in?
I think he's close to a shoe-in.
I think the perception of Fitzgerald is stronger than Johnson. I think the numbers stack up quite well with him, though.
No, I think they do. And when the conversation came up about Andre Johnson leaving Houston, that whole he's able to seek a trade came up about a month ago. You start looking at some of the numbers for Andre Johnson because that's what you do when guys that have been in the league that long start making those kind of decisions. I think it's really hard to make a case that he's not going to eventually be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know that he's a first ballot Hall of Famer when everything is said and done, but I would be very surprised if Andre Johnson doesn't find himself in the Hall of Fame, but the wide receiver position is so crowded.
And that's why first ballot becomes a dicey proposition for a guy like that.
I think his career and the numbers are going to be added to for the next couple of years up there in Indianapolis, but I think his career is worthy of being a first ballot Hall of Fame.
Andre Johnson, Marvin Harrison, you can vote for one guy. Who are you voting for?
Andre Johnson.
I'm voting for Marvin Harrison. I think he's accomplished more, and he does have that championship. I know that's not the only thing, but regardless.
I think Andre got hurt by who was playing quarterback for him.
Certainly, and that's a factor, a huge factor, but the numbers ultimately will be what the numbers are.
Sure.
And I think that's part of the issue. You look at Marvin Harrison, it's taken him a few years.
And I would have, when we discussed the Hall of Fame this past year, I said I would have thrown a vote to Marvin Harrison too, among my five for this year. So that's how highly I think of Marvin Harrison.
Right, but those guys are fairly close in our opinions, and it's taken Marvin a little time. It'll probably take Andre a little time. Antonio Gates.
I think he's going to get in.
I do too. I think position scarcity. I mean, there are not as many tight ends that you can, you know, historically, how many great wide receivers can you name? Oodles.
Right.
Not quite the case with the tight ends.
Gonzalez, Gates, Witten are going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Top five when it comes to catches, yards, and TDs with that. Interestingly, they list him as very strong. Let me skip a couple spots down to Witten, who they only list as strong. And I do think Antonio Gates is a much better candidate. I think Gonzalez is the best candidate.
Gonzalez is crazy high.
Right. Gonzalez is first ballot to me. And if he's not, there better be some ridiculous talent that is on that ballot that keeps him out. But I think he'll be first ballot. Witten was listed only as a strong candidate. Hasn't scored a lot of touchdowns. That's been his knock in Dallas for whatever reason. High volume of receptions, not as much with the touchdowns, and that plays, I think, with the voters. Joe Thomas of Cleveland, the offensive tackle, very difficult for me to assess, but he's been considered, you know, kind of by word of mouth as the best or one of the best offensive tackles in the game for a pretty good stretch now, basically since he's entered the league. Five-time first-team All-Pro.
He's 30?
Five-time, yeah. He just turned 30.
Wow.
Five-time first-team All-Pro. That's pretty good. And only one other active offensive lineman, regardless of position, has received that honor more than twice. Wish they would have listed who that was.
What, first-team All-Pro?
Yeah, first-team All-Pro more than twice, so at least three times. Mangold? Mangold's on here somewhere. He's a sneaky guy because you don't think about centers very often. DeMarcus Ware. What do you think about DeMarcus Ware?
Ooh.
Eight-time Pro Bowler, four-time All-Pro, two seasons with 19 or more sacks on his list.
Gosh, I don't hear the name DeMarcus Ware and think Hall of Fame.
I don't either, but you look at his resume, and they compared, because they said Julius Peppers is kind of a shaky candidate, and even though Julius Peppers probably has more renown, the numbers don't stack up to DeMarcus Ware and Jared Allen both. Anyway, Steve Smith, the Ravens. I don't think Steve Smith gets in the Hall of Fame.
I don't either. Again, you talk about that logjam of wide receiver. I think Steve Smith has been a really good player. I think at times, I think you can make an argument for Steve Smith that he may have been one of the top two or three receivers in the league for a year or two period. I think you can make an argument for Steve Smith is that, but I don't know. With the passing game where it is in today's NFL,
right?
I think that you have to be that type of guy for, you know, 4 or 5 years to seriously be considered.
He's top 20 in terms of catches and yards, but again, that's not as, you know, that doesn't blow me away.
And there's this balancing act, too, with a lot of these guys. Like, Andre Johnson is a guy that is and Steve Smith to some degree fills this role, too. They're physical freaks, right? They do something that nobody else can do. Andre Johnson, with his speed and size combination, was crazy. Steve Smith may be the most aggressive receiver of this generation of receivers, and I think it's almost like your idea of these guys get hurt by what they've been surrounded by for their entire career. Like, Carolina made the Super Bowl the 1 year with Steve Smith, but really was a non-factor for virtually his entire career. And Andre Johnson is almost the same thing. It's just they're on teams that don't do anything when we get to January and February, and I think that hurts these guys more so than a lot of other positions.
The number 10 guy just to round out the top 10 that they listed, and they list him as a toss-up, and really the odds don't get better from here. There's a big toss-up category.
Going down.
Devin Hester.
In.
Devin Hester's an interesting case.
He's in.
You think he's in?
If I had a vote, I'd vote for him.
I probably would too, but he's a specialist, but they do point out, you know, he's caught over 250 passes for over 3,000 yards, which, you know, not eye-popping, but when you combine that with being the best return man
in the history of the game.
Right. But, you know, we've talked about this a million times, you know, the best punter in the history of the game. I'm not saying the return man's not more valuable, but it took Ray Guy forever, right? You got one kicker in the Hall of Fame.
Sure. And I think there should be, too. I'm surprised. If Vinatieri isn't on this list, he ought to be.
You know what?
But he's got the championship.
That's a good point. Because
he's got the championship.
Right, and that's it.
But I would give Vinatieri a vote for the Hall of Fame. Devin Hester should be in at some point.
Let me just rip off the names.
He's the scariest guy back there that we've ever seen.
I agree with you, and he continues to be scary to this day. And he's kind of been written off a little bit. And he's, what is he now? He's got to be mid-30s, doesn't he? Here are the rest. I'll just rip through the names here. Tony Romo. Kevin Williams, this is in descending order of chance, but this is all the toss-up category. Romo, Kevin Williams, you don't think, you know, defensive tackle, but you start to look, he's a five-time first-team All-Pro. That's pretty good. He's one of only four active players with that many All-Pro selections. Nick Mangold mentioned with the Jets, Mario Williams with the Bills. Mario Williams? Got some work to do, buddy, don't you?
A lot of work.
That seems like a lot of work to do. Just turned 30. Jason Peters.
He's 30?
Jason Peters. Yeah, you're going to say about everyone. Well, you're not going to say about Peppers, Julius Peppers. Shane Leckler. Now we're in the slim category. Actually, Peppers started the slim category. Peppers, Leckler, come on. He's been a great punter, but come on. Philip Rivers, Justin Smith, very good player. I don't think he'll get in the Hall of Fame. Frank Gore, Joe Staley, the offensive tackle for the 49ers. Mike Vick, I don't think. And now Vick started the very slim category.
Right.
Steven Jackson, Brandon Marshall, John Abraham, Roddy White, Wes Welker, who's been to very few, you know, Wes Welker's not getting the Hall of Fame.
Nope.
Carson Palmer's not getting in the Hall of Fame. Lance Briggs is not getting in the Hall of Fame. And then, in a category by himself, almost non-existent, your boy from Vanderbilt, Jay Cutler.
You know, the two interesting names there are the quarterbacks to me, Philip Rivers and Tony Romo, wherever they are on that list, because the perception of quarterbacks completely changes if you get a Super Bowl.
Win one. Just
right.
Win one.
You win one, and both those guys, the conversation about them is completely different when you start talking Hall of Fame.
Right.
But
you win
they
one.
Win it.
Win it this year, and you got as many as Peyton Manning does.
Right.
You don't have Peyton's numbers, but you got numbers.
Right. Can you imagine how different the view of Tony Romo would be if he had one Super Bowl championship?
Sure.
I mean, people would be looking at his numbers going, look at this guy.
Yeah, it would still wouldn't put him on the Tom Brady level.
No.
But it would definitely elevate him significantly. Fourth best touchdown to interception ratio in history, the second highest passer rating in NFL history,
right.
Tony Romo.
Yeah, the conversation that we have about Tony Romo does not match those numbers because of the lack of success Dallas has had in his time in the playoffs.
If there were a Hall of Fame for Jacksonville Florida Times Union writers, Ryan O'Halloran, it's got to be a shoe-in, doesn't he? Don't you think? Got to be a shoe-in? Very strong, at least?
At least a very strong
at
candidate.
At least a very
yes.
strong candidate. We're separating it out from other things,
right?
As far as that goes.
We'll see how surly he is today.
Well, he ought to be fine, man. He had a Phoenix vacation all week long. You kidding me? Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, and frequent co-host of Jaguars Today, joins us coming up next to wrap up the week in Jags coverage. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. Dane Brugler, NFL Draft Scout, CBSSports.com, coming up at 11:15 this morning to talk what else but the NFL Draft on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, we continue on. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you Jaguars Today every Friday. We're live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Got to check in earlier in the week once with Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, and he joins us now to wrap up the festivities out at the NFL owners meetings earlier this week. Ryan, how are you, bud?
Good, thanks, guys.
I assume your travels were fine coming back. What's next on the agenda for the Jags now, just in terms of where they're headed with their focus? Is it secondary free agency, or is it full-on draft prep? I mean, obviously, you're always keeping an eye on the available veteran players out there if you can get a bargain off the street. But where do you think Dave Caldwell, Gus Bradley, and company put their focus for the next few weeks?
I think it's full speed ahead on the draft. And, you know, the free agent stuff is if a name becomes available, then they'll do their research. But you know, they got a late start on some of this stuff because they're doing the free agency and the coaching assistant coach search and all that stuff. So you know, I think starting next week, you'll see them popping around some of the pro days.
If there is anything left in free agency, probably going to be that veteran wide receiver spot. I know Greg Jennings' name got mentioned with Dave Caldwell earlier this week. Nothing on Greg Jennings in the meantime. What are your expectations for what kind of level of interest the Jaguars have in him? Are there any other veterans out there that you think they would even consider? I know you and I have talked about Nate Washington before.
One thing on Jennings is, and I was told that this is not going to be an overnight thing. He plans to take some, you know, to talk to some other teams because he sort of, you know, you look at it from his perspective, he sort of is the only guy out there with a lot of catches, and you know, he can, you know, he has until the draft to find a home. If they, you know, if they don't come up, if they don't get Jennings, my feeling is they're just going to wait for the draft to find an inside receiver, because if they had an interest in any of these other guys, they probably would have done it already.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it doesn't seem like they particularly have any interest in Michael Crabtree, formerly now of the 49ers, Ryan. But as you were out there, I assume, you know, hearing a little scuttlebutt, are people surprised that Crabtree has not really drawn any interest, or is it a case where they don't think he's nearly as explosive maybe as he once was? He's never the most explosive guy, but, you know, coming off an Achilles injury a couple seasons ago, it's a little surprising he's barely drawn a sniff.
He was never really in the Jaguars' radar, and it had more to do with skill. They felt he had lost some speed since the injury. If we look at it, the market's been open, 2 weeks and 2 days now. Obviously, teams are worried about his skill level because his price came down after the first 3 days. So, his camp, if they have half a brain, probably thought, okay, these guys got this money. Nobody called us. We got to bring our price down. Well, now they're not getting calls because maybe teams don't think he can do it on a down-to-down basis. So, his camp has to be totally scrambling right now because time's running out. They have to find a home before the draft.
We heard some of the comments of Shad Khan out there from the owners' meetings earlier this week. You had the opportunity to speak to him. Is there one or two things that you took away from that conversation with Khan?
A couple. This issue with Shad is he's not going to opine on the draft or the progress of young players, but he seemed fired up about. They had a plan in free agency, and they're able to stick to that plan. Reading between the lines of Shad is he was glad that they spent money, but also that they showed proper discipline. I'm sure that the owner and him would have loved to see them get to Marco Murray or go to some crazy number to secure Randall Cobb. But, he realizes, and he's hired these guys to put together a plan and stick with the plan, and he continues to support that.
Ryan, Tony and I were just talking off the air a moment ago about the fact that it appears the NFL has reached a resolution in a couple of the investigations that are going on. According to some reports, Cleveland with they call it Textgate with Ray Farmer, the GM, texting play suggestions down to the sideline, and it said that they're going to lose a draft pick and Farmer's going to get suspended. And then in Atlanta, where they got caught pumping in crowd noise, they're supposed to lose a draft pick and get fined heavily, yet these things were not announced at the owners' meetings, which just really goes to show you how much the NFL micromanages stuff, because the feeling is they don't want the owners in the position where they either have to defend the wrongdoing or go after some of their business partners. With the year that they had a bad PR year in sum total, but the NFL's not losing any money. They're still making plenty of money. Was there a sense when you were out in Phoenix that there's kind of a sigh of relief that 2014's behind them? Not that they're through everything, because you still got the Adrian Peterson situation, Greg Hardy's in the news, but is there just kind of a sign that, let's turn the page, let's get back to our micromanaging the message here and hope that 2015 is better from a PR perspective?
Well, it's interesting thought is when you're out there, it's all about the free agency, the draft, looking ahead, and the Borland thing was a lot more prominent than any of those other things. Adrian Peterson, that was germane with Mike Zimmer, Greg Hardy, that was with Dallas. But it's almost like all these big stories are isolated at this kind of event, just like at the combine, they're isolated to just that one team's people. So Gus Bradley wasn't getting questions about, have you ever got a text about play calls? Have you ever, considered Greg Hardy, that kind of thing. So it wasn't as big a story. And I think that, I think the league office is like, okay, we have a decision. Let's just make it a news drop on Friday when the commissioner is not available.
Talking about some Jaguar specific stuff out there, Ryan. Shad Khan, again, speaking to you earlier this week, what were his feelings on where the team is with the shipyards, where that process is, the club seats that they announced this offseason, as well as the game versus the Bills streaming, kind of those three big away-from-the-field stories for the Jags right now?
All right, take notes in order. The shipyards, he said, obviously, very early in that, But one thing he said, he was glad that the discussion is started. There's something to talk about. There's something to look at as a goal. The club seat thing, that's more front and center in terms of the Jaguars. Mark Lamping said that they would have to start construction right after the 2015 season for it to be ready by the 2016 preseason, because it's a much more complicated project because you're just having to do a lot more demolition as opposed to the scoreboards where everything was outside. What was the last thing, Tony?
The game streaming against the Bills.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, Sean was excited about that because, you know, one thing that he talks about a lot is expanding the footprint of the Jaguars globally. Well, this is how you're going to do it. It's the best way to do it. You're playing that game in London. If you really want to reach it, it's via the online. He hopes that the game is available for free. The NFL would be completely moronic if they don't make it for free, because that's what you do with experiments. You don't charge. They can do that later. But I mean, my rub, and I think I said this on the show, is the digital stuff. I don't know why you need to really mess with that with the United States first, because that game should be on TV at 9:30 in the morning. It should be available to the people who pay their money for the DirecTV. And if you want to do the internet stuff, you know, concentrate that around the world at the beginning.
Yeah, it's a good idea, but apparently that's not the way they elected to go. Ryan O'Halloran, Florida Times Union, here with us at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter. Of course, Ryan, I don't know whether or not Randy Gregory was thought highly of by Dave Caldwell or not, but let's presume he was. Okay, let's presume he was under consideration for the number 3 pick in the draft. And it comes out that he tested positive for marijuana at the combine, and on top of that said, you know, it's not a struggle for me when I wake up in the morning whether or not I'm going to smoke pot. It used to be, which I thought was incredibly dumb of him to say. How much does that impact him with the Jags brass and league-wide, do you think?
Well, you sort of split this into 3 deals. One is the failed drug test. The second one is him saying, well, I used to do this a lot. And the third one is the bonehead test. Well, he slumped off 3, and parts 2 and 3 are worse than 1. If it was just a failed, like Talvin Smith did a drug test at the combine last year, it might have affected his stock, but it didn't stop the Jaguars from taking him, and they probably got a steal at that round. If I'm the Jags, I mean, you look into it a little bit more because, you know, he obviously had no awareness. He knew the combine was coming up. So that's an issue. Is he going to have any awareness in terms of taking care of himself in the future? And also, if the league says he's already in the program, do you really want to mess with that? Because he's only 1 slip up away from a 4-game suspension. So you don't take him off your board, but if you feel like Randy Gregory and Dante Fowler have the identical grade and they're both there, then you probably take Fowler, right?
I think now you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think now it's a situation. If you stay at 3, if you trade down, I think it depends on what your compensation is, then I think it opens up a few more doors.
Well, if you're trading down, you're basically telling us that you're okay taking them.
No, potentially you could be saying that, yeah, if you're the Jaguars. Wanted to ask you, too, I know you were looking forward to getting a chance to get in the room with some of the NFC coaches, talk about some of the free agents that the Jaguars brought in. Did you hear anything that day about some of these new players in Jaguars uniforms?
Well, it was interesting. Talked to Mike McCarthy about Devon House, and he's one of the more intriguing of the free agents because he just hasn't played a lot, 35% of snaps. And McCarthy was saying that, they envisioned him ready for a bigger role, once Tremont Williams left. Well, they lost them both. So if House would have been Green Bay, he probably would have been a starter. But I think he said something back that, coming from Mexico State, so different level of competition, they felt as the years went on, he got more and more ready to play a bigger role. It just was a depth chart issue.
Ryan, let's wrap up with this thought. As it stands today, as of yesterday, 5 days away from round one of the NFL draft, who do you think would fill the top three spots on the Jags' round one wish list for that number three pick? Obviously, they probably don't need to go three deep, but give me your best guess who the top three guys on their board would be right now.
Leonard Williams would be one, because he's, I think he's just an athletic freak. I probably would push Fowler on that list, and what the hell, let's go Kevin White.
You think so, huh?
Yeah. I bet they receive high grades, and it's just a matter of when they're on the clock, okay, who are they going to be? Who are they going to pull the trigger on?
What do you think about Vic Beasley in terms of the Jags?
I think he comes into the equation if they move from like 3 to 7 or 8.
Gotcha.
I almost like Vic Beasley more than Shane Ray, because you know Ray is sort of like a 1 year guy, whereas Beasley has some pretty consistent production.
Yeah, I think Tony, when I was gone, did a kind of a poll of Jaguar fans, and it was, Tony, what, kind of split between Fowler and Beasley, presuming
yeah.
Williams wasn't there, right?
Yeah, that's how it worked out last week, yeah.
All right, Ryan-O, well, you let us know what day you want to drop by next week, and let's catch up. And we appreciate the coverage from out in Phoenix, courtesy of you at the Florida Times Union here on Jaguars Today. And have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week, all right?
All right, Mike, do you want to talk about next week's schedule on the air or off?
We'll do that off the air, all right? we'll see you. See you. I just wanted to plant a seed, Tony. See you, Ryan. We'll plant a seed in his head. Come on. Let's break it all down. What day is better for you? And, okay, so if it's not that day, let's go on to the next. All right, check out Ryan on Twitter, of course, at Ryan O'Halloran. Coming up, we've got the Honda Drive around the NFL, the state in football history, and a few more odds and ends, a little bit of news from around the National Football League. We'll get to all that coming up on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. This date, March 27th, 1963, Tony, Randall Cunningham was born, one of the better dual threat quarterbacks we've seen in the National Football League, and I want to say league MVP. Am I incorrect on that? MVP of the National Football League, according to a couple of different sources, multiple times, depends on who you go by, but was given various MVP awards in 88, 90, and 98. I thought the one in 98 might have been from the AP, but I don't think it was, according to the ever-accurate Wikipedia page. But what crack research I put into this edition of This Date in Football History. Obviously, this date in 2007, NFL owners voted 30-2 to make the video replay system a permanent officiating tool. And speaking of video replay, you see Jason Garrett today say the catch rule robbed the NFL of a classic finish in the Dallas Green Bay playoff game. No, Dez Bryant's inability to secure the football all the way to the ground
right.
robbed the NFL of a classic finish. Sorry, coach. They
guess.
Got it right according to the rule. They
still
did.
Disagree on this. I still think it's
and
catch.
The rule is not changing. So it's the same thing going forward. It's just worded differently. So Dez's catch is still not a catch. That is this state football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry on Gate Parkway here. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services, the always well-researched this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
The Minnesota Vikings have signed free agent cornerback Terrence Newman to a 1-year deal for $2.5 million. San Francisco has waived offensive tackle Jonathan Martin after just one season with the team. You may remember him from the controversy down in Miami a couple of seasons ago. The Indianapolis Colts were here in the Honda Drive earlier this week when word came out of Indy that the team would not be looking to talk extension with quarterback Andrew Luck until next offseason at the earliest. Word is now out that the team will also not be extending the contract of head coach Chuck Pagano until next offseason either. Pagano is entering the final year of his deal with the team. He has seen the Colts in the playoffs every year under his direction, winning 11 games each of the last three seasons, including an AFC Championship game appearance last year.
Aaron Hernandez trial starting to finally get a little interesting, a little intriguing as far as that goes. By the way, AP MVP in 98 was Terrell Davis. So some other outlet awarded Randall Cunningham the MVP. It's sort of stuck in my mind. But you and I talked off the air again a couple days ago. Deadspin did a pretty in-depth article.
Yeah.
You can go check it out on basically how's Aaron Hernandez avoided being charged with murder before this.
A timeline of events.
Timeline. And it really was, even though you've heard all these details sporadically, bits and pieces, to have it all in one place and to see exactly the depth to which he was identified initially in Gainesville as a shooter in a, you know, basically a walk up to a car. I guess it's a walk by shooting.
Yep.
Reggie Nelson was right on the scene.
Right. And that
in the midst of all that.
Where ESPN found it, all the names have been redacted except for Aaron Hernandez one time.
Right. They forgot to redact his name. And it said that one of the passengers in the vehicle identified Aaron Hernandez by name as the shooter in that. And with all this other evidence that's in there, now has he been indicted? I think he's been indicted on a second murder case since
I
this
believe so.
Initial one
yes.
came out. But he has been connected potentially with the deaths of six people or shootings of six people, if not the deaths of all
the
of
one
them.
Where the car and the gun got found in like his uncle's garage or whatever. I think that's the other one he's been indicted on.
Right. And which was another after the club kind of had word, somebody disrespected me, and I got to go shoot them, allegedly, situation. You got the other guy who claimed Hernandez shot him in the face, and then he retracted his statement. You wonder why he retracted his statement. I don't know, maybe because the guy's willing to walk right up and shoot you in the face. I don't know. But his fiance, who's been given immunity by the prosecutors in Massachusetts to testify against him, they said has been sitting behind him in court since his trial started, seemingly showing support for him. Was in court today wearing her engagement ring to Aaron Hernandez, a little jailhouse wedding going to go down. And Michelle Steele reported that as she left the courtroom today, talking about Hernandez's fiance, Shayana Jenkins, I believe is how you say her name, that she mouthed the words, "I love you," to him.
Did she testify?
It says, according to Tyler's passing along some info, says defense attorneys filed a motion to dramatically limit the testimony of Jenkins, arguing prosecutors should not be able to ask her about any of her testimony before a grand jury on August 13th and August 15th of 2013. And on an, I don't know. I don't know if she testified or not, but she left the courtroom mouthing, "I love you. I love you, baby. Don't shoot me in the face. I love you.
Goodness gracious.
I love you." I mean, allegedly. I say, because what, is our Aaron Hernandez going to sue me? Allegedly, man's a freaking serial murderer, and I don't think he's getting out of prison. There's too many with this other one on top of it. They're going to get him for something.
You would think.
They're going to get him for something big. Although, the point of the story on Deadspin was, hey, idiots get off all the time who don't play it just out of sheer dumb luck. Jury nullification takes place. So keep in mind, there's a bomb threat yesterday. They questioned the jurors, the judge did, in Hernandez's presence today, and the report was not sure what the basis was, but it may have been based on the bomb threat that cleared the courtroom yesterday, where apparently somebody's been arrested for that. Are you still able to serve just as well, you know, going forward?
Are you now biased against the defendant because there's been a
right.
bomb threat?
Or are you intimidated, maybe, that there's been a bomb? Who knows what, but... I gotta believe they're gonna get him, but we've seen people.
I don't know.
Casey Anthony didn't get convicted.
Yeah.
OJ didn't get convicted.
Until that gavel knocks, I don't know.
Yeah. So there you go.
Certainly felt like when the whole thing broke and you started getting details on what happened, it was like, oh, this does not look good for Aaron Hernandez. But you felt that same way in a lot of other cases here in the last 15 or 20 years, too, and it just didn't work out that way.
Piece of advice for all of you, if Aaron Hernandez is in the vicinity with a gun, don't put your face near him.
Yeah, I don't want to go clubbing with Aaron Hernandez.
No, I don't want
to. I leave immediately. If I'm in the club and I see Aaron, I'm gone. I don't know what
mad props, Aaron.
I don't know what club I'd be in with Aaron, but...
That could be a sign of disrespect, though, Tony. You don't want to leave when he walks in. He feels like you slighted him in some
Maybe.
Way. I don't know.
Who was that dude?
I don't know. Put him away and lock him up and throw away the key, please, Massachusetts. All right, coming up next, Dane Brugler, NFL draft scout, CBSSports.com will join us and talk what else but the upcoming National Football League draft. It is a Cardinal and Cadillac Friday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, folks, don't forget Friday Top 5 today, which we will deal with coming up in about 20 minutes. Your top 5 non-Jaguar current athletes that you would pay to see play. We'll unveil our list. You can share your thoughts on social media at MD_1010XL at 1010XL. Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM as we welcome in Dane Brugler, NFLDraftScout.com, CBSSports.com to talk about. It's only 5 weeks away. The NFL draft, ladies and gentlemen. Dane, how are you this morning? Thanks for coming on, buddy.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So tell us, let's start off with Randy Gregory here. And tell me what your thoughts are on how the revelation that he tested positive for marijuana at the combine is going to play with his draft stock. Obviously, marijuana is one thing. It's the timing of it, obviously, Dane, that we talk about a lot, the stupidity knowing it's coming, of testing positive there, and then admitting that he seemed to have a pretty serious, I hate to use the word chronic, but chronic problem with it. He said, you know, I used to wake up every morning, I have to fight the urge to smoke. Maybe not the brightest thing to say if you're Randy Gregory. How much has this hurt him in the draft coming up?
Yeah, you started to hear whispers of this at the combine. Before the failed test, before he tested positive for marijuana, you heard whispers of this, that teams knew about this right around the combines when they found out. It is concerning, especially in light of what's going on with Josh Gordon in Cleveland. You know, and obviously Justin Blackmon with his substance abuse issues. It really is a bright red flag that teams are going to have to consider when they are considering drafting him. And it comes down to, it's not like he's a flawless prospect on the field either. He has his question about his toughness, about his size and growth potential. So there's a lot of questions around him right now. And so you have to figure out where's his value? Where does a team feel comfortable drafting him? You saw a top 10 talent, but weighing in at 235, you know, questioning how much muscle can he pack onto his frame? What is he going to be able to be a three down defender? There's a lot of questions. Plus you add in the off field. And I think there's a good chance we see him slip to the mid to late first round.
Yeah, mid to late first round, you got to think a lot of teams would probably be taking him off their board that are picking there in the top 10 to 12, although there are some pretty pass rush desperate teams in that range too. I know you have him mocked in your latest mock to Atlanta. How strong a consideration would he still have to be if he's available there at 8 compared to what they could get in the second round?
Well, you have to do your due diligence, obviously. You have to, you know, and these teams have been doing that. You know, they've been talking to Gregory for a long time about this. So they have a good feel for who he is as a person. Now, there will be some teams that will be a little more tolerant about this than others. Like I mentioned, the Cleveland Browns, I couldn't imagine them drafting Randy Gregory after everything that happened with Josh Gordon, and probably a similar thing with the Jaguars with Justin Blackmon. Now, a team like the Atlanta Falcons, you know, who have a brand-new head coach who, you know, they might be a little more willing to take that chance. You never know, but it just comes down to their, you know, the personal interviews, how they feel, the connection with the player. Do they think it'll be an issue moving forward? That's really the big question. This pass rush group is one of the stronger positions in this this draft class. So even if you don't get Randy Gregory, it's not like you can't find another pass rusher later. So me, I'm passing on him in the early to mid first round. When's the team going to take a chance? It's going to be interesting to see. That's going to be one of the more interesting storylines on draft day.
You know, Cleveland's got the two first-round picks, Dane, but, you know, the speculation is both Cleveland and Atlanta, for let's call them Textgate and Noisegate, as they've been referred to, may lose a, quote, significant draft pick. It's not going to be a first-rounder, I don't think, but let's say they lose a second or even a third-rounder. That's got to put even more of a premium on not swinging and missing in the first round, doesn't it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the Browns had 6 picks in the first 115 picks this year, which is the most of any.
They have 2 fourth-rounders, and, you know, I've asked people around the league, well, what's your opinion? What do you think the Browns are going to lose? And the most popular answer I received was a 4th-rounder. Now, we'll see if that's what it ends up being or if it is a 2nd or 3rd-rounder. But for teams like the Falcons and the Browns, they're not one player away from the playoffs. They need to build talent on their roster. They need a lot of help. And so to lose a premium draft pick is going to be a big deal. And hopefully we find that out sooner rather than later. But you're absolutely right about, you know, not missing on those early picks. And, you know, every draft pick's important, but especially that'll be especially true if they start losing some of those top 100 picks.
The Jags obviously picking 3, the 2 teams in front of them, Tampa Bay and Tennessee. Tampa Bay has been attached to Jameis Winston for a month and a half now, but they're trying to put out word that that may not be where they're going with that, or would at least accept offers for that pick. Tennessee finally started talking about Marcus Mariota a little bit this week. What kind of odds do you put on those two quarterbacks coming off the board somehow, 1 and 2?
I think Jameis is the overwhelming favorite to go number one to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, I totally understand Tampa Bay saying, hey, you know, we're open for business just in case they get, you know, a ridiculous offer that makes sense for them to move back and, you know, possibly pick up an RG3 type of haul in the process. But I don't see that happening. I think Jameis goes number one, and it makes too much sense for it not to happen. But then the real intrigue comes in at number 2. Well, what do the Titans do? Marcus Mariota is sitting there right in front of them. Now, Marcus, if you isolate the trait, you have a player that has the makings of a future NFL starter, a guy that you can rely on to be a long-term starter. But you just have to question the transition. He's going to go from a spread offense at Oregon to an NFL pro-style scheme where it's going to be apples and oranges. And he's going to be asked to do a lot of things in the NFL that he just wasn't asked to do in college. Now, does that mean he can't do it? No. It just means he's unproven. And so we have a lot of question marks there. And ideally, you'd love for Marcus Mariota to sit for a year. And so if you're the Tennessee Titans, do you feel strongly enough about Marcus Mariota that you could sit him for a year? Zach Mettenberger's your starter. Or do they feel like, hey, we feel like Zach Mettenberger can be our guy. We're going to go defense at number 2 and pass. And if that's the case, where does Marcus Mariota fall? Does he go 6th to the Jets? Does another team like the Rams or, you know, the Browns or the Eagles, do they see their chance and trade up and pounce on Marcus? That's another one of the interesting storylines on draft day is where does Marcus Mariota end up?
Let's say he goes number 2 to whatever team. Doesn't really matter. The Jags sit there with the 3rd pick. Are they absolutely out of their mind if they do anything other than take Leonard Williams out of USC?
I mean, Leonard Williams is the top player in this draft, in my opinion. I think he is, you know, we're talking 5 years from now. If you had to pick one player who I think is going to be the best pro, I would guess Leonard Williams. And there's a lot of people around the league who agree. So I think he'd be the obvious choice. But they're doing their due diligence on all these pass rushers, obviously. Guys like Dante Fowler, Vic Beasley, Shane Ray. They might fall in love with one of these guys and say, you know what, that might be our pick. You know, Leonard Williams is a terrific player, but again, he's not flawless either. And so they might see Dante Fowler and say, you know what, the more we investigate this guy, the more we're falling in love. So I don't think Leonard Williams would be a no-brainer, but he would make an absolute a lot of sense there at number 3 for the Jags. He would fit into that defense very nicely and wreak havoc. So I think Leonard Williams, he would be the favorite to go number 3 if that's the case, if how the draft order plays out. But I don't think it would be a slam dunk. I think one of those pass rushers would have to be awful appealing as well.
Looking at those pass rushers, I know Dante Fowler is the name that gets attached to the Jags a lot right now. When we ask the fans, they're generally split between Dante Fowler and Vic Beasley. When you look at those two prospects in particular, do you feel like Fowler is being put at number 3 because he feels like the more finished product ready for the NFL right now than Vic Beasley?
They're two different prospects. I think they bring two different skill sets, and so it's going to come down to what the Jaguars want in their pass rusher. With Fowler, you have relentless energy, a guy that he doesn't necessarily know what he's doing yet, but that energy that he brings off the edge, that first-step explosiveness, and just that terror, the rip-through block, He's just an outstanding pass rusher. With Vic Beasley, you have a little bit more of an athlete, a guy who, you know, the big question with him at the combine was, how big is he? You know, I had a scout when he left Clemson back in September, back in the fall. He left Clemson and he weighed in, Vic Beasley, at 220 pounds. And that was a concern. But at the combine, weighed in at 246 pounds. But then the next question was, okay, well, he added the weight. How does he move? Well, he blew up the combine with his, all his, agility tests. And so, you have to feel very, encouraged by Vic Beasley and the type of athlete that he is, what he brings on the total package, what he brings. But obviously, still a little bit of work in progress as a trench defender, a guy that needs to work on, you know, stacking and shedding, playing the run. So I think both of these guys, have a lot of strength. They have a few weaknesses. They bring something different to the table. But I think both would be excellent choices. Me, I'm taking Fowler. I think he's the third best prospect overall in this draft, and a guy that I think is just, you know, there's a lot of potential here, a lot of upside that we haven't seen yet.
Speaking of Beasley, he puts on that 20, 25 pounds in that short time span. Did that raise any eyebrows? Like, how is he putting on that much weight in that shorter time span?
Yes and no. I mean, you started to hear towards the end of his senior season that he was getting bigger. So, I think that 20 to 25 pounds is a little more gradual. He weighed 220 pounds in September. But if he was up to 235 by December, then that 246 of the combine isn't that much of a red flag. The bigger question was, can he sustain and still play at a high level? And the way he worked out at the combine, I think, really showed that. So I think you have to be encouraged. Now the question is, can he keep that weight on? And it wasn't just a show for the combine. Can he keep that weight on and, you know, let it be functional weight, functional strength? That'll be the big question for him in the NFL. But you have to be encouraged by what you saw at the combine.
Dane Brugler here with us, NFLDraftScout.com, CBSSports.com. Dane, I think Tony and I both agree, linebacker's a position. We don't talk as much about it with the exception of some of these guys who are kind of hybrid pass rush linebackers, but the Jags need linebacker depth on this team. Paul Posluszny is coming, you know, up on another big salary year, and he's going to be here, but he's had his share of injuries. They love Telvin Smith. I know they signed Dan Scuda, but Dave Caldwell told us, you know what, if they draft a linebacker in round three and he beats him out, they're okay with that because Scuda can contribute on special teams and, you know, can play a role on third down. So let's say we get to the mid-rounds, the third, fourth round. How good is this class for linebacker in general, even if they're not immediate contributors this year?
It's a solid class. It's not a great class of linebackers, but it's not a bad class either. You can find guys in that second, third, fourth round, like Eric Kendricks out of UCLA, Stephon Anthony out of Clemson's been a hot name lately. You know, guys that have played the middle, the mic, they've played outside. They bring a little bit of versatility there, tackling machines that, you know, can be athletes. And the biggest thing for, NFL, for linebackers moving from the college level to the NFL is, can they cover? You know, that's what all 32 teams could use more linebacker depth. For guys that can cover tight ends and backs out of the backfield. But that's something that at the college level, not every linebacker was asked to do it. So that's a big question. And that's why a guy like Paul Dawson out of TCU, why he will be highly coveted in this draft class, because he's shown he can cover. He's one of the better coverage linebackers in this group. So I think that's the big key, is finding a guy that can cover, but a guy that can also possibly be a three-down defender, stay on the field. And so I think Paul Dawson, maybe in that third round area, might be a good option.
If it wasn't for an ACL injury, I have a feeling we'd have a lot of Jaguars fans every day telling us that Todd Gurley should be the pick at number three with the need this team has at running back, and we would have been trying to explain why you probably don't take a running back in the top three of the NFL draft. But Todd Gurley, Melvin Gordon, these are guys that are expected to potentially be first-round picks. Do you feel like for the Jags, if either one of those guys were to fall to him at 36, that's a pick they should make? And is there any other running back worth considering that high in the NFL draft at 36?
You know, Jay Ajayi out of Boise State, to me, is a player that is worth a top 40 pick. A player that has the total package. I got done studying Ajayi, and I found myself trying to find weaknesses with him. Now, he's not the most dynamic back in the world, but he's just a solid all-around player, can catch the ball out of the backfield, a promising pass protector. You see power, you see quickness. So I think Jay Ajayi is definitely in that top 40 mix. But with Gurley, he's a top 10 talent, but I think you're absolutely right about taking a running back that early. But he's going to go, I absolutely believe he'll be in the first round, coming off the ACL in November. The rehab's on pace for him to be back by August, and as long as that continues to be true, I think a team in the first round will draft him. The Chargers at 17, maybe the Cardinals. He won't get past Dallas at 27, I promise you that. So I think Todd Gurley, he won't be in that conversation in the second round. Now, Melvin Gordon, he could be. That'll be interesting to see where Melvin Gordon goes. He could be in that late first round. He could go in that early second, so he's a little bit more of a wild card. But I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if Todd Gurley's still on the board in the early second round. He's that good.
The fantasy football world will lose their collective mind if Todd Gurley goes to Dallas. I'll just tell you right now. There will be such overdrafting going on of Todd Gurley right out of the box. It will be unbelievable. One guy out of the SEC we still get a lot of questions about and suggestions that the Jags should take, Dane, is Amari Cooper out of Alabama. In your mind, how much separation is there between Cooper and Kevin White out of West Virginia? And are they clearly the top two wide receivers on the board, in your opinion?
There's not a clear separation. I think going into the combine, I had on my draft board, I had Amari Cooper at my number 5 overall player, and I had Kevin White as my number 6 overall player. So I had them ranked very closely. And that stays true to today. That's still how I rank them. I give Amari Cooper the slight edge. What he was able to do in the SEC this year was nothing short of fantastic. The setting record. Did they force feed him the ball a little bit? Sure, but when he got the ball, he knew what to do with it. He knew how to get open. Defenses knew where the ball was going, and he could still get open and create for himself as a ball carrier. So. He's not that Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones type of player, but he can be a Jeremy Maclin type of player, and that's a player that's one of the highest paid wide receivers in the NFL right now. So Amari Cooper, terrific talent. Kevin White, though, he's right there. He's right behind him, and he's not Larry Fitzgerald, but he's in that type of mold as a player. And I think Devontae Parker out of Louisville, he's in that conversation. There are some teams that have Devontae Parker ranked ahead of those two, so I think it really comes down to what kind of flavor wide receiver do you want. With Devontae Parker, you have more of that AJ Green type of player, that ridiculous catching radius, the size that can beat you at all levels of the field, just a very versatile player. Coming off the injury that he missed half of the senior season, but still a very productive player that you really think highly of going to the next level. So I think. Those three players will be somewhere in the top 12. I don't think they're going to last very long. They're going to be off the board pretty quickly. But I do think Amari Cooper, Kevin White, that'll be the two guys dialing for that number one spot.
All right. He is Dane Brugler, and you can follow him on Twitter at DP Brugler. Brugler spelled Brugler, just like it sounds, and you can find him at CBSSports.com with NFLDraftScout.com. Dane, we appreciate it, man. I'm sure we'll call on you again sometime in the next 5 weeks. Until then, thanks for coming on today.
All right, thanks, guys. Anytime.
All right, you got it, Dane Brugler. A little look at the draft as we get ready to close out the week here. This note from Tyler, Tony Pauline, DraftInsider.net, mm-hmm. I should say, said tweeted out that a league source informed him that since the Randy Gregory story broke, about a half dozen new teams have scheduled visits with him, including San Diego and Pittsburgh. You hate the idea that this guy could be some, transcendent pass rush talent, and he's going to fall down the board right into the lap of some team that's already better suited than you are, right. And just because, look, they take the risk inherent with that as well. And maybe they end up passing on them after their visit and all their research and all that. But boy, wouldn't you hate to see him go to a team that's a borderline playoff team every year anyway, Tony, and they get a top five talent perhaps.
Certainly
when they're
a possibility.
20. Oh, you hate that.
Yeah, that's 17 and 22, in the upcoming draft and in San Diego and Pittsburgh if he is considered by those two teams. I'm not sold that he's going to drop that far anyway. Yet, but I it certainly is a possibility now, and it didn't feel like it was one a week ago.
No, it didn't. I tell you what's a possibility. We may get through the Friday Top 5. Coming up next, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. Today, we asked you who are your top 5 athletes you'd pay to see play that don't play for the Jaguars. Could be football players, could be whatever. We'll rip through. We got to rip through the top 5 when we get back, but we'll do just that coming up on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, let's knock this bad boy out here, Tony. Brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealership. Fan Feedback Spotlight today is a Friday Top 5, your top 5 non-Jaguar athletes, current athletes that you would pay to see play. We got a lot of feedback. We'll see what we can get to, but let's start the countdown.
Number 5.
Five.
Come on.
5.
5.
5.
5.
5.
5.
5.
5.
Number 5.
All right, number 5 for me, starting with still my favorite sport on the planet, Major League Baseball, and the guy that when you go to the ballpark, you just never know what the heck he's going to do, as in you just don't know what he's going to do, is Yasiel Puig. And he comes in at number 5 on my list. I don't think that he's the best or most dynamic player in baseball or anything like that, but he is the kind of, you get that kind of Manny Ramirez feel with him, where you don't know exactly what he's going to try or do every time that he's anywhere on a baseball field. So number 5 for me is Los Angeles Dodgers outfielder Yasiel Puig.
All right, Tyler, jump in. What you got at number 5 there, bro?
I'm also sticking with baseball, and it's a guy that you pretty much do know what you're going to get every time he steps on the mound. Last year's Cy Young and MVP Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw.
All right, Clayton Kershaw. I was kind of on the borderline. I kind of almost had a tie for 5th, but I'm going to eliminate Bubba Watson because I've seen him. And yep.
I haven't seen anybody on my list play.
And I haven't seen any of these guys play either. Now that I eliminated Bubba, he was in a tie for 5th. Crazy as this may seem, this might make you happy, but I only have one NFL player on the list. I want to see Odell Beckham Jr. do some Matrix stuff. I mean, seriously, look at the way he played in the second half of last year. I think he might be the most exciting young player in the National Football League. So I put Odell Beckham Jr. in the 5 spot. Let's move it on.
1, 2, 3, 4. 2, 3, 4. 4. 4. 4. 4. 4.
Number 4.
Tyler Devitt, what you got?
The guy, Floyd Money Mayweather. No explanation needed.
There's an explanation. Why do you want to go see a wife beater?
The guy.
A woman hitter.
Well, he hasn't lost
it. He's a despicable human being. I'd go to see him get his face caved in. That's what I'd go to see him for.
Maybe that's why.
So there is an explanation needed.
Well, maybe that's why I put him on my list. But no, actually, he's 47 or no. He hasn't lost any of his fights to men. I don't know about the women. Obviously, he's a terrible person, but he is a great fighter.
Can't stand him. Cannot stand.
He's one Floyd of those Mayweather. Guys that if he didn't have all the away from the sports stuff, he would definitely be on my list. I couldn't in good conscience put him on.
All right, Tyler Devitt. I went with, from the basketball arena, could have gone one way, went another. Went with Russell Westbrook. Right now, it just, to me, he's in a league of athletes. I mean, ridiculous athletes. He's almost a cut above all of them. And I get it. LeBron's a better player. There are better players than Russell Westbrook. Not too many this year.
No.
But what he does, what he's doing this year is absolutely phenomenal. At his size, the rebounding, the highlight dunks, the shooting, all that stuff. Yeah, he's a bit of a knucklehead and makes some poor decisions. Not like Mayweather decisions. But nonetheless, Russell Westbrook, my number 4.
Number 4 for me, the only NFL player on my list. Haven't seen him play. He's my favorite player in the whole league. Russell Wilson. Gosh, I love Russ. And I love watching him on TV. I can imagine in the stadium it's that much better to watch a guy extend plays and feel that the electricity of the crowd going, what the heck is he doing? Throw the ball, throw the ball, throw the ball, throw the ball. And then he'll throw one of those big looping passes 40 yards downfield, perfectly timed, and you're like, gosh, that's why I love this guy. Russell Wilson, number 4 on my list.
He's a good one. Moving on.
Three. Three. Three.
Easy.
One, two, three.
Freak.
Freak.
Three.
Number 3.
All right, homered up a little bit on this one and try to think, who would I want to see off my favorite team? I would want to see him at his pre-2014 injury form, Masahiro Tanaka. The way he started last year was just fascinating. He's got a bevy of pitches, wide array, and hopefully he can give me a full season of what he did at the beginning of last season, but he is my number 3.
Number 3 for me, probably off to the best start in Major League Baseball history, the most dynamic player in the major leagues, Mike Trout. he is incredible. And when you look at his numbers against history, if this guy keeps it up for another 12 to 13 years, he's not only a Hall of Famer, he's one of the best that has ever played the game. That's how good Mike Trout has been to start his career. Number three for me.
Tyler?
Number three for me is a guy that many people may not know about because he hasn't really played too many games in the Major League Baseball level. His name's Chris Bryant. He's the best prospect in the minors so far this spring in 32 at-bats, 11 spring training games. The guy has 9 home runs, so he's probably the best hitter the Cubs have right now in their whole system, so he's number three for me.
And you can catch him in the minors for at least a couple more weeks because they're smart. They're not stupid. Let's save another year before he hits free agency by sending him down to the minors.
Yep.
And that's exactly what the Cubs are going to do. Moving on.
1, 2, 1, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2,
I don't think that's how it's going to work out. For me, number two, there are some sports and some athletes that can only be done justice live, and I think that track is one of those things. Usain Bolt comes in at number two for me. I watch it on TV, and I'm impressed. I have a feeling that if I watched it live, I'd be telling everybody for the rest of my life that you just won't believe how fast this guy actually is in person. He makes it to number two on my list.
On my list, I have Patrick Kane, who's actually out right now for the Blackhawks, but go online on YouTube. He has this stick handling video, and it almost seems like it's fake. His hands are unreal fast. The guy puts on a show every time he goes out on the ice.
All right. I think he changed that at the last minute for some reason, but I'm just kidding with you. All right, Patrick Kane for you. My number two is a guy that I want to see beat Mayweather's face in. Still want to see Manny Pacquiao in person. I know the skills
would have been my
have
six.
Faded a little bit, yep. You know, and a couple of years ago might have been my top one. In fact, I think we even did a top five in the past where he may have been right there at the top. Not quite as sharp as he used to be, but oh, what I wouldn't give to see him beat the living snot out of Floyd Mayweather.
I'm with you.
And moving on.
Four.
Two.
One.
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 One. All I need is one.
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 Number one.
What you got, Tyler Devitt?
I have Greg Hardy. No, I'm just kidding. Number one, I have Russell Westbrook, the guy you had on there. He's number one for me because I don't think anybody in the NBA can really guard this guy. He's so much faster than everybody else. And another guy that was on his level was Derrick Rose. So those two guys almost seemed superhuman to me. Russell Westbrook is just so aggressive out there. Never seems like he gets tired at all.
Oh, God. It was so funny. It wasn't Russell Westbrook that Jeff Prosser was talking about when they did the sports injury segment the other day. He said something like, how long will so-and-so sprained ankle keep Derrick Rose out? Best line Jeff Prosser may have ever had. I probably didn't deliver it well. My number one, Tony, you had him on the list. Mike Trout is the freaking natural.
Unreal.
He's the natural. I heard Schilling talking about him yesterday. He's like, you know, growing up, my dad was like, you'll never see a guy like Mickey Mantle ever again. And that's what Trout is. Trout is like this guy, like, comes in. He's the best player immediately. And every year he's played, he's been in the top two in MVP voting. He is, you know, as Schilling said, he'll be the greatest player I ever see, the greatest player my kids ever see. You know, somebody will come along. There's always somebody, right? Tiger Woods came after Jack. There'll be somebody else that
right.
comes along. But for right now, Mike Trout is, I think, the most dominant team sport player going. Man, you know, you can argue that, whatever, but he is the guy I would have at the top of the list, non-Jaguar athlete that I would pay to see.
Number one for me in a sport, the biggest global sport in soccer, it's a chain reaction sport. And there are guys that can elevate themselves above that chain reaction where you don't necessarily have to execute the perfect play to score a goal. And there are a handful of guys that fit that profile. Nobody more fun for me to watch than Lionel Messi. And what he can do with the ball at his feet, he is a one-man wrecking crew on that on the football field. I almost said pitch, but I knew it would annoy you, Mike.
No, you annoy me with his mere presence on the list, but that's okay.
Lionel Messi is so fantastically fun to watch play the game of soccer. He's number one on my list.
All right, it doesn't really annoy me. I don't care. You could watch whoever you want to watch. I don't have to go with you. I get it. I appreciate his brilliance at what he does.
He's an artist.
It's just not something that it'd be so far down the list of what I would pay to see. Give me a ticket, I'll go see him play. I might even pay to see him play, but I'd pay for a lot of other guys before him. Just to give you a quick one here on Facebook from Joshua Lee Wright. He went number one, Kobe. Number two, Ronda Rousey. Got a lot of Ronda Rousey today.
She was on my also rants.
Number three, Tom Brady. Number four, Marshawn Lynch. Number five, Kate Upton. Because it's Friday, she's hot, and you guys are awesome. Much love to the Jaguars message board. All right, there you go, Joshua Lee Wright. You got a couple of quick ones from Twitter today.
Here's what we got from Michael. We got Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi, Ronda Rousey, LeBron, and Sidney Crosby from at Irish Jaguar. You already lamented this list, but Teddy Bridgewater at five. Number four, Christian Benteke, the Aston Villa striker. Josh Reddick, the Athletics outfielder. Conor McGregor, who's a UFC fighter, and CM Punk at number one from Cristiano, who I believe is actually in Brazil. This is one of our Brazilian listeners, so the fact that he has Neymar on that list should not come as any surprise. LeBron, Usain Bolt, Messi, and Cristiano Ronaldo. From Simon, Clayton Kershaw, Neymar, Beast Mode, Messi, and Ronaldo. From Ocho Fisho, Messi, Ronaldo, Usain Bolt, Floyd Mayweather, and LeBron James. You get a lot of those top
got a lot of players. A lot of Steph Curry today as well, and that's why I kind of limited to one NBA guy.
Right.
Those are the, to me, those are almost more the guys that you're like, wow, they wow you when you see them almost a nightly basis. I could have put LeBron, Steph Curry, and Westbrook easily in the top five if I wanted to.
Sure.
Those I kind of made room for my man Tanaka.
Like, I thought about Giancarlo Stanton, then I was like, but I saw him. You know, I saw him when he was a Jacksonville Sun.
Who's our guy in Brazil?
Cristiano.
All right. He will be our official Pro Bowl correspondent when they head on down
Sweet.
To Rio. That's what we've got. And maybe we'll get him a credential. I'm not promising. You got to put us up, though, in Brazil, right? Tony and I are coming to Rio, baby. Yes. Tony, have a good show Monday with Osh.
Yeah, fun.
I'll be out at the Guggen, and everybody else have a fantastic weekend. Let's say hello to the boys of XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.